Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic.
It is my pleasure to welcome back Heinz Block to the podcast. Welcome back, Heinz.
Thank you. Good to be back.
So, Heinz, we've had you on quite a few times now to talk about a bunch of different aspects of maintenance and reliability. And for those that may not be familiar with you, you have authored numerous books. You have authored ones on oil mist lubrication, turbo machinery, machinery failure analysis, to name a few. There are lots and lots of different books you have authored over your time, and you have a wide range of experience. Can you tell us more about your background, how you got started in maintenance and reliability, how long you've been involved with maintenance and reliability, and what you've done over your vast career?
Well, we might start by just mentioning that I graduated from high school in 1950. And went through a rigorous apprenticeship at the time in Germany. Had an opportunity to come to the United States in 1953 and initially worked in a machine shop, which, of course, in retrospect, was rather interesting and important because it made me ultimately into a practical engineer rather than just a theoretician. In any event, I served in the U.S. Army from 1953 to 55, and at that time decided that I would apply for engineering school. Went from 1958 to 62 to the New Jersey Institute of Technology while still working. I went to college full time, but I worked in this machine shop on weekends or vacations and so forth, which was no problem. My first job as an engineer was with Johnson & Johnson, the famous company that is known for Band-Aids and so forth, and I was a high-speed machinery designer. Went at night to get a master's degree, and after the master's degree in 1964, started working for Exxon Research and Engineering. They were at the time still called ESSO Research and Engineering. And my entire career with Exxon, which of course spanned several decades, was in machinery reliability improvement, extending the life of equipment through better specifications or through retrofits and upgrades and so forth. And after I retired or became independent, decided to just be an independent consulting engineer with a worldwide clientele and exposure. The decision was to capitalize on this experience. And it's during that time that I wrote quite a number of articles, over 750 by now, and 21 textbooks, which, as James just explained, all deal with machinery reliability improvement. So that's the background.
All right, excellent. So extensive experience in all of this. And one of the things we talked about very briefly in one of the past podcasts is oil mist lubrication. It's very different than traditional lubrication thought processes, techniques, those sorts of things. And there's some distinct advantages you've talked about in the past. So let's start from the beginning. What is oil mist lubrication?
The best way to visualize it is for the listener or for a reader, in case of books, to think of hairspray. If you had hairspray in a bottle, and it's propelled by a gas, or it's even propelled by you just pushing down on a button, and you're sending ambient air into a small nozzle. And in that nozzle, the air combines with a tiny amount of the liquid that is in the bottle. What comes out is a spray of atomized globules of the liquid. So these globules of the liquid, in the case of oil mist, are, of course, lube oil. And these globules have a size which is small enough so that, like in hairspray, they remain suspended in air for a little while. The hairspray, of course, almost immediately depressures itself. So the globules of hairspray start floating down to the ground. Not so with oil mist, because we continue, of course, to move the mixture. And incidentally, the ratio of the mixture by volume is 200,000 volumes of air for one volume of oil. That mixture, that ratio, remains in the atomized form, and it can travel in a header, typically a 4-inch header, throughout a plant, from pump to pump, or from equipment to equipment, from asset to asset. And that oil mist is then led through a reclassifier, which is just nothing other than a small orifice. It is sent into the individual bearings, rolling element bearings, that have to be lubricated in the plant. So that's basically what oil mist is. In making that oil mist, you actually have no moving parts in the so-called oil mist generator. It's a bit of a misnomer. In the oil mist generator, you simply mix a slight amount of compressed air with the oil, which is in a little reservoir, and there's nothing moving. And there's only air pressure that's involved. The air pressure in the header is perhaps in the vicinity of a few PSI, and it travels, as we said before, 600 feet.
All right. Excellent. So how does this oil mist lubrication differ from traditional lubrication methods? You know, normally we have an oil bath, or we walk up and we pump some grease into a bearing. How does this differ in terms of how it lubricates those rolling elements, how it protects those rolling elements, those sorts of things?
Good question, and it's relatively easy to answer, because as these atomized oil globules, which, of course, in the case of hairspray, you can sort of guess what size they are, 3 micron, 2 micron, as these globules of oil travel through a moving bearing, they get knocked together. And as a result of getting knocked together, they become larger droplets of oil. And these droplets of oil are plating out. They are wetting the rolling elements of a bearing. And as they wet the rolling elements of the bearing, they form a film between a rolling element and the bearing races. And that film is sufficient to prevent the rolling elements for making metal-to-metal contact. There's always this oil film in between. And the beauty of that oil film is that it greatly reduces the frictional resistance that would normally be encountered in a rolling element bearing. And at the same time, it coats everything, including the inside of the bearing housing. And it has a slight pressure, maybe a half an inch of water column, over the ambient surrounding air that surrounds that pump. The result is that none of the ambient air with its water vapor or dust can enter into the bearing housing, and therefore the bearing housing is filled with oil, with either a fog, an oil mist, or it has a certain amount of liquid oil that has plated out on the rolling elements. And that is the preservation region, you could say, or the preservation effect that one gets with oil mist. And with the liquid oil that you had mentioned before, which is represented by an oil sump, and in some cases by oil rings that are dipping in the oil sump, you don't get the preservation effect. You don't really create an overpressure. You have a bearing housing in that case with traditional lubrication that will cool off a little bit at nighttime, or it certainly cools off significantly if you shut the piece of machinery off. And as a result, whatever air is still in that bearing housing is going to cool, and it becomes smaller in terms of volume and pressure. And that then allows the ambient air to be slightly higher in pressure and force itself into that bearing housing. And therefore, with traditional lubrication, you don't get protection and preservation.
All right. So that oil mist lubrication creates a slight high pressure area where it prevents moisture and other contaminants from flowing into the bearing itself, correct?
Absolutely.
All right. So not only are we lubricating it, we're preventing all those other causes of bearing failure, corrosion, contamination, all those other things by moving to the system.
Exactly. And also, it is a once-through method. Now, in a minute, we can perhaps explain how in closed oil mist systems, which are very prevalent today, one really reclassifies or reconditions, collects all the oil once it has gone through the bearing. It gets collected in a collecting tank, and that collecting tank then, when it has a certain number of gallons of oil in it, which is usually taking a half a year or a year, that oil can then be sent through a filter, and it gets pumped back to the oil mist console for reuse. We have to clearly explain that initially the oil has gone through the bearing only once before it gets recollected and before it gets perhaps cleaned up in a filter. So the same droplet of oil that has just once gone through the bearing is going to reappear, depending on the size of the collecting tank, a half a year later. It's going to be the same droplet of oil, hypothetically speaking, that re-enters a bearing housing. Now contrast that with conventional lubrication. In conventional lubrication, there is perhaps a quart of oil in a bearing housing, and that oil stays in there until you replace it, until you drain it out, until you really replace it with fresh oil. And that same oil is going through the bearing several times in a single minute. And as a result, that oil has a much greater probability to degrade, or a much greater probability, since it doesn't have an overpressure in that bearing housing, to become contaminated with the water vapor that exists in the ambient air or with the dust that exists in the ambient air.
All right. So there are some significant benefits to oil mist lubrication over that traditional lubrication approach. Now, so we talked about, you know, the preservation of bearings, the fact that, you know, the oil is not sitting there for long periods of time, all these other things. What other advantages is there to oil mist lubrication? Is there a reduction in labor hours? Is it, you know, reduction in failures?
Yes.
What are these other advantages?
You mentioned both of the most important ones. First of all, the labor hours are approximately 10% at the very most of the labor hours that you would need with conventional lubrication. With conventional lubrication, you have to replenish the oil because you have to replace the oil because it degrades and deteriorates the formulations that go into a lubricant, which is some special ingredients to make it anti-foam or to make it more appropriate for high loads. Those very special formulations degrade as time goes on. And so the oil in a conventionally lubricated bearing housing has to be removed, replaced, and that is labor intensive. Then also remember for just one second that in a conventionally lubricated bearing housing, you normally have what is called a constant level lubricator. A prominent manufacturer of these is a company in Wisconsin that has been in business since 1917. The company makes an oiler which is called a trico oiler. But that trico oiler has to be set at the right height. That trico oiler has to be observed by an operator or by a maintenance technician who periodically is going to reset maybe this lubricator if it has been misplaced or misadjusted or touched by an operator inadvertently. And also, while we're on the subject of these trico lubricators, many, many people are unaware of the fact that the caulking between the glass bulb at the top of that trico oiler and the holder under it, which is a die-cast aluminum sometimes material, the caulking that exists between that bulb and its holder is similar in terms of its behavior, similar in terms of its life expectancy to the caulking that you have on your bathtub. If you want to sell your house, there is a probability that you're going to re-caulk, scrape out the old caulk because it has fissures in it, it has little cracks in it. The point simply is that in your own home, you realize that these caulkings don't have an everlasting life. The caulking in a plant that exists on a trichlor oiler on a lubricated piece of machinery is exposed to rain and sunshine and temperatures that are low. You name the number, maybe it's minus 10 degrees Fahrenheit in the winter, occasionally. And also the temperature in the summer is 110 degrees when the sun shines directly at it. So this is a huge temperature difference, or a range of temperatures, 120 degrees. And the result is that the caulking has a finite life. And for that reason, these trichlor oilers have to be replaced periodically. So that's just a labor-related issue. Now, of course, we can now also talk about the reliability-related issue. As long as you have anything that has this caulking, and if the caulking develops slight fissures or cracks, you actually aspirate rainwater that may run down that bulb. And you have this rainwater being hauled in or being sucked in through what is called capillary action. And again, relating that to science, an engineer normally knows that you can take liquid out of the ground to a depth of approximately 30 feet down. If you put a pipe into the ground 100 feet, you cannot suck liquid up into your pump. If that pump on the level ground, you cannot suck it from a depth greater than 30 feet. So the question is, well, then how does the crown of a sequoia tree, which is 200 feet up in the air, how does it get water from the root system? And the answer is through capillary action. And again, we want to just relate this to something we see in the average home. If you've ever used a tea bag, and that tea bag is draped over the rim of a teacup, that wicking action from the string that hangs over the teacup is slowly, I couldn't say siphoning up, but the wicking action is actually pulling up in some ways some of the tea, and it ends up outside the cup. And that is what is happening with the aspiration of rainwater into bearing housings of rotating equipment. That is all prevented through the use of oil mist. So we have now the labor factor, which is one-tenth of what you normally have, and then we have a much greater reliability by using oil mist, which is basically self-checking. And just as a final point before you ask me other questions, the record is at present telling us that over 3,000 plant-wide oil mist systems are in operation as of, I know the year, it's 2018. And these over 3,000 systems in the time period from the year 2000 to the year 2018, they have had four times that the oil mist system was not operating. And in all of these cases, it was human error, because of course, somewhere you have a valve that's associated with it. Somewhere you have an originating oil tank. And if you don't put oil into that tank and you allow that oil in an open system to ultimately end up in the atmosphere and you don't replenish that oil, well, then your system doesn't feed oil mist into the equipment. In any event, think of this, 18 years 3,000 systems, 4 incidents of a system shutting down or malfunctioning. In those 4 system malfunctions, which of course, if you calculate the reliability, is a 99.999996 reliability. So it's 99, and then after that you have 5 nines, and then a 6. That's the overall uptime. That's the overall reliability of oil mist systems. But I wanted to also then say 4 pumps had their bearings ruined in all of these, in all of these hours that the systems, the 4 systems worldwide on 3,000 units were shut down. So we have an overall uptime and reliability which is well over 100 times better than what you have with traditional lubrication in a petrochemical plant when you use the oiler bulbs, the constant level lubricators, and when you use labor.
All right, excellent. So lots of significant advantages. The oil mist lubrication systems themselves are very reliable within themselves, so we don't have to worry about those issues. What are the disadvantages to oil mist lubrication? Are there any?
There is really only one disadvantage that I know of, and that disadvantage is cost. Very many plants are built on the basis of looking at nothing but first cost and the startup date. And the reward system, almost worldwide, that is used in industrialized countries for the building of plants, the reward system for the project manager is such that he or she gets rewarded not for how long that plant lives 25 years from today, because that person is out of the picture by that time. But that person, that plant manager, that reliability manager, he or she gets usually rewarded, especially the project manager gets rewarded on the basis of coming in under budget, so he wants to save money to begin with, and also to come in time-wise 2 or 3 days before the normally projected oil in date or start running date. And that kind of reward system then is in a way encouraging that we don't necessarily go by long-term reliability and long-term low cost. While we're on the subject, I want to be sure to mention to you that those people, those large companies or small companies, which over the many decades that I've been in this business and that I've been a rather expert, I should say, hopefully I'm not too presumptuous when I say that, but I know oil mist better than perhaps many other things that I know. And as a result, I know that those companies that come to me and say I cannot justify oil mist, they have overlooked that they should also put oil mist on their electric motors. If they also put oil mist on their electric motor, then they completely dispense with the need to have a person come around and use grease to replenish the grease in those thousands of electric motors. Today, as we speak, 50,000 electric motors are lubricated with oil mist and 160,000 pumps are lubricated with oil mist. Companies that are including in their cost justification calculation the labor savings on motors to the labor savings on pumps, and who are also looking at the reliability improvement of motors, the less frequent motor bearing failures, the less frequent motor downtime events, they can justify oil mist typically because their payback is in the vicinity of 1.5 years to 2 years. There have been many where oil mist was justified in just 8 months. But I don't normally talk about those because I would rather just say, plan on having a payback of somewhere between 1.5 and 2 years. And most companies feel very good when they have that kind of payback.
Absolutely.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out Iridicio's IBL Blended Learning for Maintenance and Reliability Professionals. This SMRP-accredited project-based curriculum will take you through all aspects of a maintenance and reliability program and provides you with all the tools you need to generate a 30 times return on investment for your organization and a set of credentials from the University of Tennessee for you. You can find out more at ibltraining.com.
Now, what does it take for organizations to convert to an oil mist lubrication system? It sounds like we got to run headers, we got to run lines, we got to do a bunch of different things. What's actually required to implement this type of system?
Well, in line with your question, the first thing that we should say is that oil mist is used initially as a storage yard medium. In other words, as equipment comes in for the project that has 572 pumps and 33 mixers and whatever, one has an outside storage yard, and the oil mist consoles, one of them anyway, that will ultimately be used in these units once the plant is built, they will initially be piped up to temporary headers that run the length of the storage yard. And from the temporary headers, small diameter lines, plastic lines usually, go to each bearing of the equipment in the storage yard. Then, as the equipment gets taken away from the storage yard and gets installed in the field, that's the time when a 4-inch header usually is going through the plant. It's a 4-inch header simply because that is the optimum stiffness. If I use a 1.5-inch header in my plant, which may be more than adequate to feed all the volume of the oil mist from the generator, oil mist console, to the various pieces of machinery, 1.5 inches may be a perfectly appropriate diameter, but it is not rigid enough. I would need too many supports. So I'm much better off using a rather large and excessively sized header of 4 inches, because I can do with far, far fewer supports going from one end of the plant to the other end of the plant. And then once you have installed this header system and its associated cost, of course, needs to be in the project, then you start working from the top of each header, and you put a line, which is usually 3/4 inch, a pipe, and you put it at the top 12 o'clock position of that header. You go up maybe 6 inches, and then you come over X number of inches until you are in the vicinity of the machine that is to be so lubricated. Now, the issue is that, unfortunately, when a project is going to be put together, when a justification for the project is going to be derived, the people who know what I have just mentioned to you and your listeners, they are not involved in the project. They only get involved after the project has been allocated $1.3 billion for a huge refinery, and that's now a fixed cost. And if I now belatedly say, oh, now I'm in the plant, you're close to startup, we have another 2 months before we push the button, I want to have oil mist installed, then they don't go back to the board of directors and say, sorry, gentlemen, we have forgotten $2.8 million on this $1.3 billion plan for oil mist. And then they take the position that, oh, well, maybe we can install it after the plant has run. Why? Because I'm the project manager and I want to run this plant starting on the 15th of March. And I don't want a delay of even a single day. And I want to have the budget in no way exceeded because it will look bad and I will not get the promotion as a project manager that I'm seeking. That is what is happening. And that's an important issue to communicate, that plants, companies, corporations often make the mistake of involving reliability engineers too late, and they don't have input at the right time. Many of my books deal with that issue.
Absolutely. Now, you know, we put these header systems in, we think about it long ahead of time, you know, before this project goes into place, so that way we can make sure we budget for it, we get it in place, we organize it properly. Where can people learn more about oil mist lubrication? It sounds like there's a tremendous amount of benefits. It's been proven. Where can we learn more about it?
Well, let me just mention a few possibilities. At present, a book is in preparation, and it's supposed to come out in December of this year, but book publishers sometimes are a little bit late. But anyway, the book is written by myself and by Don Ehlert, who was the real expert for the Lube Systems Company. I knew Don Ehlert. Don Ehlert died less than a month ago at age 71. And so the book is coming out, even though he had contributed to it, and dozens of illustrations in the book are from him, but he no longer benefits from it. The book is called Optimized Equipment Lubrication, Oil Mist Technology, and Storage Preservation. That book, with its issue date late this year or early next year, will be the only one that will be in print. I had authored two other books on oil mist, one in the 1980s and another one in the year 1998, which is now obviously 21 years ago. The one in 1998 is called Oil Mist Lubrication, and then : Practical Application. It was written by myself from the practical side, the user's side, but I was able to convince at the time, PhD student by the name of Abdus Shamim. I was his, I don't call it counselor, he had a professor that was his counselor, but once a month I was invited to see what kind of progress he's making with his PhD thesis. And when his thesis, which was well over 100 pages, was issued, I said, Abdus, you have, of course, the rights to that thesis. What I would like to do is incorporate it in the latest revision of a book which will have the title that we just mentioned, and your name will be on it, and my name will be on it, and whatever royalties we get, we share 50-50. And he couldn't believe his ears. He was a young man, but there he was. And I said, yes, we'll do that together. I do the logistics. I know the publishers. So the book came out. But he then started to work for General Electric with his PhD, and he works in the gas turbine department, and he no longer is involved in oil mist. So over the years, we have had more and more calls for the book to be updated, especially with regard to coming up with cost justification calculations, which Don Ehlert and I had done together over the years. And they will be in the book that I just mentioned, the one that's coming out either within the next 2 months or at most within the next 4 months. So that's what we look forward to. But the other thing, in addition now, that a user can do, I have a series of slides which originally were configured or were called the Oil Mist Masterclass. And if anyone wants to purchase these slides, then I would, of course, put them on a CD and would sell them to the person who is interested in these 170 slides. They would have to communicate with me to get the pricing and so forth, but they're available almost instantly. And my email address, James, you, of course, have it, but for the sake of a listener, you might, again, be sure that it's available to them. It's my full name with an initial in between. So it's Heinz P. Block, H-E-I-N-Z, initial P, B-L-O-C-H, @gmail.com. And so the third method that I wanted to mention in answer to your question, how does one get more data on it? The third one is that one could, of course, get a colleague of mine and myself to teach these master classes. and to narrate these slides, because while it's true that I can give these slides on a CD to someone who's interested, that is not true teaching. True teaching means that you interface with your instructor, especially if you have an instructor who is intimately familiar with the technology. Now, in 2 months, I'm going to be 86 years old, soon after that, maybe I no longer have too much of an inclination or ability to teach these classes. So you can't say, well, maybe in 10 years, well, it's kind of blocked to teach that class, because in 10 years, I'm 96, and then I can assure you that I'm not going to be interested in traveling, and the customer or the client would have to come here. That is possibility number four. I'm not saying 10 years from now. I'm saying next year. When I lived in Des Moines, I had groups of people, reliability engineers from the Middle East, come to Des Moines at that time for 5 working days, and they stayed in a certain hotel close to where I lived. And every morning I met with them, and we went over the kinds of subjects that at the time they wanted to be briefed on. And then a little while later, there was a group of people from Japan, and they did the same thing. They got a group of people together. They came to Des Moines. We put them up in a certain hotel and had a meeting room with a projector, and I would do that. I can no longer do it. Oh, it's not prudent to do it for 5 days continuously, but smaller groups and shorter times, and me getting a colleague and me alternating in terms of the presentation with a competent colleague, those are the things that have occasionally been done. And those are these four methods by which someone who is an interested party could tap into our knowledge base, and we will pass on the technology in the sense that it will enable somebody else to run with it, to implement it, or to certainly fully understand it.
Excellent. So we have some great resources there. I'm looking forward to the book coming out. I'll definitely have to add that to my reading list, because we want to learn about these things. We want to be able to communicate about these things, understand them. So I think some of these books you mentioned are excellent resources for that. Now, in your experience, as you have worked with companies to implement oil mist lubrication, what makes the biggest difference in those companies being successful versus the ones that were not successful in it?
Well, the let me start back and tell you that I, of course, worked for Exxon for many years. And while I was in Baytown, Texas, I occasionally went to ASME subsection meetings that were organized in the city of Houston. So I spent maybe 2 hours every 2 months going to these sessions. And at one time, one of the top engineers, totally familiar with oil mist from Shell, and myself working for Exxon, we had met with a gentleman who at the time worked for Union Carbide in Ponce, which is a small city in the Caribbean, in Puerto Rico it was. All right, Puerto Rico. And the three of us were on a panel, and all of us had slides. And the gentleman from Union Carbide, who, as you know, were later involved in real disasters and were bought out by Dow, Union Carbide no longer exists. That gentleman showed slides of an oil mist system that didn't work, and he took the position, oil mist is a technology that doesn't work. When did we get together? Well, the year was 1975, when I first arrived in Baytown on an assignment from New Jersey. The moment we saw the slides projected on the screen, the gentleman from Shell and I, we said, well, we know this doesn't work. They had installed the so-called drops, which is the line that goes from the header towards the receiving end, which is a bearing housing on a pump or bearing housing on a motor, they had installed them with a U-bend in it. In other words, there was a low point. And so the oil mist would fade out after a few months, and it would fill the lowermost part of the tiny pipe connecting from the header to the oil mist. And the oil mist could no longer flow. And that was the end of that story. So we said, well, why should we go on? In terms of the people who sat in on that meeting, maybe 40, 60 people, explained this immediately, and we showed what an oil mist system should look like that's properly installed. So to me, of course, having been involved in since actually 1965, when assigned to other plants and implemented oil mist, including in Venezuela and in Baton Rouge, and since 65, I was with it involved. I consider the systems to be exceedingly easy to install, exceedingly reliable. The question is, of course, if somebody who is totally ignorant and doesn't even read the book and doesn't listen to us, if he installs it, he may make mistakes like the one that I just told you that was made by the individual who was an engineer for Union Carbide in Puerto Rico. So is it possible to make a mistake? Of course, you can make a mistake with anything. You can make a mistake when you hang your kitchen door. You can make a mistake when you drive your car, or when you repair your car, or when you have your car serviced, and on. There is nothing under the sun, and this is a true statement, that can't be buggered up, that can't be through ignorance or through malice or whatnot, that can't be made not to work properly. That is even true for an airplane. All of us know that airplane disasters have happened occasionally, infrequently, fortunately, or else we wouldn't fly. But if a pilot of an airplane, a 777, as we might call it this time, a 777, the pilot gets warning that he only has enough fuel for 2 hours of flight, and he disregards. After maybe another 15 minutes, he gets another warning, and he disregards it. And he disregards these warnings that he's running out of fuel. After 2 hours, what is going to happen? Is there going to be some magical force that slowly deposits the entire plane on the nearest airfield, or that gently places it on a highway somewhere? No, the plane is going to crash. Why? Because the pilot disregarded several instruments, several warnings, several bells and alarms. And that is true for oil mist too. I don't want to frighten anyone with it. There are oil mist systems in countries where the labor is almost, I should say, elementary in terms of training and education. And yet they have successful systems. Why? Because they write down step by step what they have to do. They cannot allow, after they perhaps are installing a system, they cannot allow chips from maybe making a thread at the end of a pipe. They cannot allow these chips to get into the bearing. If you are not cleaning up, or if you're not preventing chips from getting into the bearing, then the bearing will fail. And of course, then that's attributed to the oil mist. People have a habit of attributing things not to themselves or to not having followed instructions, but they attribute it to this, in their opinion, new system. Look at this. We've had failure since we installed oil mist, and we didn't have a failure on the so-and-so pump when we had conventional lubrication. Well, that's like saying I'm associating certain events that happen out there with the wrong root cause. It's a to give you a stupid example, but it is an example nevertheless. If you live in a rural area, every time the sun rises, a rooster is going to crow. So unless you're a little bit more scientifically inclined, you end up saying when you get older that the rooster crows, which brings up the sun. Well, that's of course wrong. The sun comes up whether the rooster crows or doesn't crow. And then if you get to be a scientist, you're going to say, well, it's not actually the sun that's rising, even though it looks like that. but the Earth is actually traveling around the sun, and it takes 365 1/4 day for the Earth to travel around the sun. And if it takes 24 hours for the Earth to travel around its own axis, to rotate around its own axis. My point simply being that if you're asking me whether there have been people who have been unsuccessful with oil mist, my reply is no matter what kind of machinery has been built and designed, there's always an issue when somebody doesn't pay attention to how it is to be installed or run.
All right. So the biggest issues we see with that is improper installation, you know, people not understanding how it works, the fundamental principles, like you mentioned, having that low spot in that pipe where the oil would collect, you know, those types of things. Everywhere else, it's been successful. So it comes down to the level of detail and expertise in the design and installation of the system.
Absolutely. And the technology is totally, totally sound. There is no flaw in the technology. Allow me to make one more comment. I was, and I mentioned it 2 minutes ago, I was on a one-year assignment out of New Jersey in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And at that time, Baton Rouge had the best Exxon employee, the most qualified Exxon employee in terms of oil mist technology. He was on the level of what you might call a chief engineer. He has long since retired now, and he is probably no longer alive. But be this as it may, that gentleman showed me a heck of a lot about oil mist, but he took the position that there are certain bearings, just very few in that plant, that you will not be able to lubricate with oil mist. And when I was in a position myself at other plants to look into these matters, I found out that Charlie was his first name. I'll only give the first name. Charlie had overlooked the one thing, and that is that you need a special reclassifier, a special little orifice to properly convert the oil mist into a spray when you have a bearing that is a certain size, when you have a bearing that doesn't operate at sufficient speed to knock these little oil globules together. And when I recognized that and confirmed it in working closely with Loop Systems, then we made a decision that certain types of bearings needed a different reclassifier. And from that minute on, there has never been a bearing that couldn't be lubricated with oil mist. All the bearings in the plant that I've ever been involved with in these many, many decades. And I first arrived in Baytown in 1975, so that's almost 40 years ago. But in these many, many plants that I was associated with, including Amway in 1965, which was ultimately retrofitted so that all bearings could be lubricated with oil mist. In all of these, every rolling element bearing could be lubricated with oil mist, as long as we were aware and had a list of which bearing sizes, which bearing speeds required a special reclassifier. And that's the end of that story.
Excellent. So it all comes back to, like you said, you know, the thorough understanding of the technology and how we use it. Well, Heinz, I want to thank you for taking the time today to talk to us about oil mist lubrication. But before you go, where can people find out more about you? Where do they go to learn all the great things you've done?
The best I can say is you go, of course, into the internet and you put in my name. And when you put in Heinz P. Block, you generally see the credentials and date of birth, 1933, and the titles of the books that I had written. You're not going to see the titles of the over 750 papers that I had written or conference proceedings that I've been involved in. That's far too voluminous, but in case a listener or a user or a reader has that kind of interest and has a legitimate reason, because maybe they're planning a course or maybe they're planning to attend one of these special get-togethers, which incidentally in early November I'm at a NORIA conference and I do a 4.5-hour workshop on lubrication optimization, which has a lot of stuff in it on oil mist, and that's in Houston. But anyway, if a reader or listener has a greater interest in that, then I can send him the full list of the papers that I had written over the years. The thing that I can't do is make copies of some of that. I can just say in which book. The book is actually one that came out in 2017. The book is called Petrochemical Machinery Insights. It has 724 pages, and much of what we have discussed here is in that book also. But it's not in the kind of detail that you will find in the book that we had earlier mentioned, which of course is the one that comes out either in December or perhaps as late as February. So the information is out there. People who are interested in it can get it, and they can teach themselves, and they will prosper as long as they follow the instructions, or if they hire someone from the Loop Systems company and pay that person's daily rate, he could be the supervisor, or he could be the person who looks over their shoulder and takes responsibility by counseling and tutoring the workers who implement an oil mist system.
All right, excellent. Well, Heinz, I will make sure to put links to all of those things in the show notes so people can find you, they can find the papers, the book when it comes out, all those great things. I want to thank you for taking the time today to talk to us about oil mist lubrication, all of the benefits to it. Thank you so much.
And thank you for having me. Have a good day now, and the best to you, readers and listeners.
Thank you.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.